Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
Ray and Brad on The Advertising Show. As always, happy to be back with you live here. Lisa Hirschman is joining us today. We're going to talk about a book called Faster, Cheaper, Better, The 9 Levers for Transforming How Work Gets Done. That's a good thing to know, isn't it? And we've got Jeremy Kent with us as well, our European correspondent here on The Advertising Show. With Ray and Brad, it's being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production. Brad, how are you doing?
Well, I'm doing wonderful. Looking forward to today's interview. Lisa seems to be a lively prospect. She's apparently not done her research and knowing what she's getting into, which we always like them to be in a, I don't know, what do we call it, a false sense of security?
Anxious, Brad.
Anxious.
Yeah, that's right.
No, and by the way, it was nice of her to call in early. Some guests do call in early. Usually, not always. Sometimes guests go like this. Hello? I'm calling in. Why aren't you answering? And it's like, well, why don't you check your schedule? You're calling in early, sir. Yeah, but Lisa, she politely says, I'm a little anxious. I'm calling in early. I'll call you back. I mean, there's sweet people out there like Lisa, and then there's others.
You sound like you're doing Alex Ben Block there for a minute. But
I was kind of like Alex, wasn't I?
Alex, okay. Yeah, right. Hey, no, we're happy to have Lisa in our green room right now. So,
and for those that may not be familiar, Alex Ben Block, of course, our regular contributor from The Hollywood Reporter.
Is a good guy.
He is a good guy.
Groupon continues to make news, and that just absolutely amazes me. If I went to a an investor and said, listen, I want to do some coupons, can I have like $100 billion? And they'd say, sure, no problem, because nobody's ever done that. But Groupon seems to be challenging that theory. It's now going to the movies, according to the Wall Street Journal. The fast-growing website, which specializes in mass emails, oh, that's not new, touting daily coupons, that's not new, plans to unveil a promotional tie-up with a Hollywood movie studio. It's the first of many offers. The site says it's planning with media companies in the coming months. Obviously, it wants to grow. Groupon had previously served up deals for magazine and newspaper subscriptions, the Redbox movie rental service, and bundles of movie tickets, but it hadn't offered a substantial national deal for a specific movie. So bottom line is, through Groupon, Lionsgate Entertainment, that's the people they're doing the biz with, will offer half price or $6 tickets to its new suspense thriller, The Lincoln Lawyer. So that's their latest adventure in cutting your profits in half and filling those seats. I don't get that. Why?
I think it's, you know, the old joke used to be, yeah, I'm an actor, and most of my movies are, you know, on DVD within 30 days of release. Now, you know, they're going to have a joke, I guess, about Groupon. But I don't know, Ray. There is a statistical way, and our engineer guest today maybe can explain it, or maybe it's too boring and we don't want to get into it. But many years ago, I used to deal with a client that was in the, still is, the ice cream retail business across America, and he used to get frustrated because he tried to explain to his franchisees that if you buy one, get one free, it actually is profitable and can drive business, and it's more profitable than not making that offer. They never wanted to make that offer. So I think in this case, the movie business is saying, if we can put that out there and get a certain number of people that are willing to buy a discounted ticket through Groupon on a national level, and as you know, you've got to hit a certain level in order for the offer to be valid, then it's just a statistical, you know, computation to say if we hit this figure, we're profitable, and it's maybe likely more than we would do just rolling it out, and not to mention the marketing of movies today, which is, you know, the lion's share of what it costs to get a movie out there. So
I would suggest that for a Lionsgate Entertainment, for an Old Navy, for a large consumer-oriented business, that it makes a lot of sense, because obviously you're building brand awareness and you're generating potentially some long-term business. But when Groupon hits these smaller clients with their you know, with these discounts and such, it seems to me to be, conversely, a very short-term, not a win-win situation for them. So I believe, you know, I'll go for that. I mean, obviously, coupons are great. A lot of people use them, and there's a lot of people, you know, the in their seats as a result of that. But, you know, it just, whenever you start discounting somebody something, a product, a service, something like that, it's like, well, you know what? I paid full price for that doggone thing. I'm getting screwed. I don't like that. So it's not good. Hey, I want to mention a little bit about Lisa, because Lisa's bio is very long. It's actually one page, but it's small font, so it's there. Okay? So Lisa is a CEO, a seasoned business professional, and an author, bringing a wealth of real-world experience and innovative style to her position at Hammer and Company. Prior to joining agency, Hirschman served as a corporate senior VP of operational excellence at Avnet, Inc., the world's largest B2B distributor of electronic components and computer equipment. Her successful management of OPEX initiatives at the 72 countries in which Avnet has operations led to her being honored with the 2008 Avnet Corporate Chairman's Award. That's pretty cool. Her global implementation of Hammer principles at Avnet led to an extensive multi-year collaboration between Hirschman and Hammer. Basically, her practical experience, engineering background, and engaging presentation style led to her selection as Dr. Hammer's successor at Hammer and Company. Previously, Lisa led process and resource development at Bridgepoint. And I could go on and on here, but, you know, the sun's setting. Okay, no, I can't do that. But she also is the co-author of a business guide. And this will catch your attention, too. It's called Faster, Cheaper, Better, The 9 Levers for Transforming How Work Gets Done. It was rated 8 out of 10 by Inc. magazine. As an inspirational and sought-after speaker, she is also a conference moderator in the United States and around the world, and, of course, has appeared on Fox Business News and various other syndicated radio and television shows as well.
So that's it. We don't have time for the interview. Have a nice day.
Yeah, really. It's good to no, we're joking, Lisa. Don't go anywhere, okay? The Advertising Show, Ray and Brad. Well, there's a lot to talk about here. If you've seen the book, it's pretty cool. Yeah, if you don't have it, you ought to go get it, right? The Advertising Show is being powered by Schiphol.com. Schiphol.com is the website there. And Ed and his crew here in the Houston market do an incredibly good job of helping us market the Advertising Show. Tendency, the platform, is what we're using right now. And check it out at Schiphol.com. Jeremy Kent, always a pleasure from over there. You know what I'm talking about? The one across the pond. It's the European news correspondent, and more news coming right up right now.
Hello and a very warm welcome to the European News Desk, coming to you from the heart of London. I'm Jeremy Kent. This week, BT is planning the other big wedding, Costa Coffee battles it out with Starbucks, and Rolls-Royce is the number one super brand. BT's long-running campaign featuring fictional couple Adam and Jane is cashing in on royal wedding fever and calling on the British public to help plan their wedding. A new ad by Abbott Mead Vickers BBDO will air in April and show a heavily pregnant Jane planning her wedding when she suddenly goes into labour. The arrival of the new baby means that Jane no longer has time to plan her wedding, so the public have been invited to pitch in. A dedicated Facebook page will show Jane choosing items such as her dress and the car, and the public will be invited to select their favourites. Whichever ones receive the most votes will be included in the next TV commercial, and two lucky voters will be given the chance to feature in a BT ad as well. On to coffee wars, and Costa Coffee has reignited its feud with Starbucks as it launches a new campaign that claims twice as many consumers prefer Costa Coffee to Starbucks. The campaign is Costa's biggest to date and will span press, outdoor and digital, with headlines such as "Sorry Starbucks, the people have voted again," "A triumph for coffee lovers," and "Voted the nation's favourite coffee shop." New research by Karmarama found that 54% of coffee drinkers named Costa as their favourite coffee shop, while 27% plumped for Starbucks. In January last year, Starbucks complained to the Advertising Standards Authority about Costa's claim that 7 out of 10 coffee lovers prefer Costa. The ASA ruled in Costa's favour and let the ads run. Finally, Rolls-Royce took top spot in the business section of this year's Consumer Superbrand Survey. The annual survey, which ranks brands according to their reputation among opinion formers and consumers, saw Mercedes-Benz take the top spot overall, with Rolex running up in second place. Last year, Microsoft conquered the business poll and Google the consumer index. So could this year's win for Rolls-Royce and Mercedes signal a shift away from technology brands as austere times see people reach for real-world luxury? This is Jeremy Kent at the European News Desk for The Advertising Show.
Jeremy Kent, thank you for joining us here this week on The Advertising Show. As always, great content. Our European correspondent with Ray and Brad on The Advertising Show, and a very special guest on the road this weekend. But Lisa is CEO of Hammer and Company. HammerandCO.com is their website, and also has a brand new book out, which is a really great book. It's a business guide called Faster, Cheaper, Better: The 9 Levers for Transforming How Work Gets Done. And Lisa, it is such a pleasure to have you here on The Advertising Show. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Brad and Ray. I'm happy to be part of your show.
Thanks.
Yeah, we're going to get into the nuts and bolts of your book because it's jam-packed with some great information. In your book, Lisa, you call faster, cheaper, better the elusive holy trinity of business. I take it you were raised Catholic?
Actually, I was.
Well, that now that we've got the religion aspect out of
right,
it, out of the way, you know, let's talk a little bit about why these three ideas are so desirable in today's marketplace. When I first saw the title of your book, Lisa, I thought, okay, faster, I get that. Better, I get that too. But cheaper, I was having a bit of a trouble with. I was trying
outsourcing,
to
outsourcing, Brad. Outsourcing, yeah.
Well, I was asking myself, is cheaper universally desirable by all? I mean, I think BMW, Louis Vuitton, there are many out there that might disagree with that.
Well, you have to think of it not necessarily from the aspect of price, but also from the internal side with how much are you spending on your infrastructure costs and so forth, and is there a way that you can reduce those costs to free up hardworking resources to do more profitable, more value-adding activities?
Well, I think that's fair enough. So more efficiency, not necessarily cheaper, but maybe that term has a negative connotation, and you're really talking efficiency. So in broad terms, why should the combination of these three ideas, Lisa, be so desirable in today's marketplace?
It used to be said in the past that of the trilogy, pick any two, but you can't have all three. And when you're moving toward more global markets, you have very intelligent, well-informed customers and suppliers. In order to remain competitive, remain connected to your customer, and add value, you really need to, and to stay in business, you really need to find a way to manage all three aspects to remain competitive and grow and even innovate.
You know, early on in your book, you discussed this concept called end-to-end process. If you could, Lisa, describe how this process targets different problems. And, you know, it's a totally different technique than such more well-known ideas or concepts such as the Six Sigma idea. And you say maybe it's a little different way of approaching.
What happens in most organizations, and this, it doesn't matter whether you're talking profit, not-for-profit, we have a tendency to organize by departments or functions. And as a result, we set targets for those departments and functions, and we manage for hitting those targets. But at the end of the day, your customer doesn't really care how well the marketing department's doing or the engineering department. They want to know, what's the end result? What are you delivering to them? And so if you look end-to-end, you're focused on the end result. You don't get caught up in those individual, as we call, silos. And the silos become the master rather than the end result and what impacts the customer that should drive how you work and how you set your targets and even incent people.
You know, I think that's so important. Start with your customer, I suppose, and work your way back. Before we jump into the nuts and bolts, as I said earlier, with your book, let's lay some groundwork if we can. You introduce an idea early on called process design. If you could briefly define this for us, Leith, so what is it? How does it work? Who does it apply to in today's business?
Oh, it's a great question. It actually applies to any type of business. We have one of the fun things about my job is I get to work with everybody from the U.S. Air Force to Clorox to Cirque du Soleil and the Church of Latter-day Saints, because every organization has processes. And the concept is when you identify those end results, and they should be in two areas. What does the business need and what does the customer desire? And when you have those end results, then you want to design your work accordingly. I'll give you an example. We get caught up in the way we've always done things, and we have an example of an organization that makes and ships tires, and they wanted to be more efficient, so they bought a piece of equipment that wrapped the tires rather than doing it manually. They rolled it out. Everybody was excited, and someone in the back said, "Why do we wrap the tires?" Well, back in the day, we sold white walls, and we wanted to keep them clean, but that work was memorialized, and everyone was trained the same way, and we got used to it. And the question is, are we focusing on the results and what's necessary? And let's examine those steps to get there.
Wow.
What an interesting idea. You know, I don't know if you've heard the idea. I heard this, gosh, 30-plus years ago, and it stuck with me. And here you're giving a great example today. The husband saw the wife cutting off the end of the roast before she cooked it and laid it on the side of the pan and put it in the oven. He asked, "Why do you do that?" And she said, "I don't know. My mom always did it." Mom was asked. She said, "I don't know. My mom always did it." They got back to the grandmother, and the grandmother said, "I never had a pot that was big enough to get the entire roast in there, so I always had to cut the end off." And it's the exact same thing that you're talking about, and I think that holds so true in business that just bears their head down and doesn't really look at what's going on. Let's jump into talking about some of the process design steps that you illustrate so well in your book. Like many other business techniques, if you will, there are steps that you recommend in your book. And again, a great book. I recommend all of our listeners go out and check it, purchase it through Amazon or various other channels. Let's go through some of these steps, starting with get organized, mobilization, as you call it.
Yes, and that is, what is it that is, if you were to change something in your organization, what would have the biggest impact? So gathering data, and this can, you know, come from a variety of areas. Maybe you're seeing business drop off as a result of an activity, or maybe you're getting customer complaints about something. And so understanding what's the data, what is the voice of the customer, maybe you're seeing internally costs go up. Where does it make sense, and where will you have the biggest impact to delivering value? And that's that mobilization piece. What process do we need to look at and that will have a big impact to the customer? That's, in essence, the mobilization.
And are you saying get oriented, meaning get more focused on your customer, as you were talking about earlier?
Yes, exactly. What does the customer want? I've done exercises with groups where I have the sales force write down what the customer wants, and with the customer in the room, I hand them the marker and say, "Now circle what they got right." And even though we may connect with a customer every day, sometimes we lose perspective and we don't keep up with what their needs are, and as a result, we're not servicing them in the best way possible.
Wouldn't you say that was true of most service businesses and you know, the clients that you work with? A lot of people really don't get that?
Well, yes, we become comfortable, and we talk to some of the same people, and it's not just service, but also product delivery as well. And I always encourage sales forces to, you know, you're not looking for selling necessarily your product or service. What the customer wants is you to solve their problems, and if you can do it with your product or service, that's a win.
You know, you mentioned earlier that you work with Cirque du Soleil, or have worked with Cirque du Soleil, and I did a double take recently. There was the Cirque du Soleil people. You think of them in Vegas, or think of them in you know, grand venues for their magnificent shows and such, but it was Cirque du Soleil under the big top. And that kind of threw me. It's like, what? Under the big top? That it didn't seem to fit. You know what I'm saying, Lisa?
Yeah, they are. They're a creative, very inventive group. And what's fascinating is we're helping them with their logistics process, with ensuring they get the right costume to the right performer in the right city at the right time. Hmm. And the process that supports it, and this would terrify me, would be weight management, because they have a plus or minus 2-pound tolerance. And if you are plus or minus 2 pounds, those costumes don't fit properly.
Really? I suffer the same thing through my wardrobe, too. It's amazing how that is so coincidental. Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth on the Advertising Show with our special guest, Lisa Hirschman, CEO of Hammer & Company, and also the co-author of a brand new book, a great book called Faster, Cheaper, Better, The Nine Levers for Transforming How Work Gets Done. We'll get some more work done, and we'll continue on with our interview here in just a moment on the Advertising Show.
You're listening to the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
Hey, Columbus, we can't turn back without an order from you.
I'm not talking while the flavor lasts.
What are you chewing?
Peach nut gum?
Welcome back, Ray and Brad, on the Advertising Show with Lisa Hirschman. Lisa is CEO of Hammer & Company, hammerandco.com, and the author of the book called Faster, Cheaper, Better, The Nine Levers for Transforming How Work Gets Done. Need to get that book. Lisa, it's a pleasure to have you here at the Advertising Show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, and Lisa, just to wrap up the process design techniques, the final two of those, Get Crazy and Get Real, can you explain those, please?
I can. Well, the Get Crazy is really the fun part. And when there's a big misconception in many industries that to innovate, you have to innovate your product or your service. And what we say is you can do some tremendous innovation with how you deliver your product or service. Dell is a great example with the way they were customizing units to send to customers and being able to cut down cycle time tremendously. We write a lot in the book about Progressive Insurance and how they didn't really revolutionize the insurance policies, but how they delivered them to their customers was a great innovation and a disruptor in the industry. So you can that get crazy. You get people thinking very creatively, and you give them, as we say, the authority to break dishes. Some very unique ways of taking your business to the next level can happen. And the get real is now that you've got this innovative approach, how do you implement it? And how do you ensure that it becomes part of the everyday delivery so that your customers feel that consistency and rely on exceptional service?
I think the get crazy concept is a very uncomfortable place for an engineering student to go. Are you? You feel pretty comfortable there, though, don't you?
Well, you know what? There are people from all different viewpoints, whether it's a very disciplined like engineering or you have people that are more creative. We actually recommend that the team be structured from those that have more of a technical background, non-technical, have maybe been with the company a long time, and those that are newer to get some of that creative flow of ideas happening.
You know, in your book, you're quoted as saying the principles of process design will not give you a complete process design, but rather they will give you an idea for a process design. So going back to your idea of how you implement process design, that sounds a bit counterintuitive to probably most.
Well, what folks make the mistake of is you cannot design one single process for every situation. So what we encourage people to do is to look at 80%, 80 to 85% of the time, what is the process? And we encourage the deviation for some special customization, but what you want to do is deviate when it's necessary, but get back to the standardized if possible, because what the customer wants to feel is they want reliability and the same thing to be, you know, they expect a certain level of delivery, and you want to deliver that consistently. So we recommend that you design end-to-end, but you implement in waves or segments or by customer or by product line so that you can ensure and test it to give the output that you want and then continue to add to that in terms of implementation.
Yeah, you started off a chapter entitled Measure for Measure Perfectly. I'm quoting from the book now when you say, every self-help and 12-step program known to mankind begins with the same premise. You must admit you have a problem before you can begin to solve it. Now, my thinking immediately was, if only all businesses and Charlie Sheen thought this way, Lisa.
That's true. And we measurement is very difficult because it becomes personal. Our compensation, our reward systems are tied to how we measure productivity, measure our activities. And so when you start to talk to people about changing the measures, when you say the results aren't good, what they hear is you're not doing a good job. What we emphasize is look at the process measures and try to take that personalized piece out of it. And are our measures really aligned with the outputs and the results we want? Sometimes we pick measures that actually drive behavior counter to the results that we want, and it can be very frustrating.
You know, I'm going to save for next segment a discussion about the seven deadly sins of measurement, because you not only include that in your book, but you also have a nice article that pretty much consolidates all of that, that I believe was written for one of the business online publications. But to wrap up this segment, as with all great ideas, Lisa, there always has to be someone to manage it. So who's the one that gets assigned the task to manage process design? Is it always the guy at the top or gal at the top, or can it be delegated to someone of lesser position?
Well, it's always best to have a leader engaged, and it's someone of influence, because our research shows that when the leader isn't there to help tie these activities into business results, it fails. Certainly, things can be started literally from the ground up, but unless you get a leader engaged, they're not going to give you the resources, time, money, focus, priority necessary to really achieve huge results, and that's what we're looking at.
So it's not Joey in shipping. It's somebody a little bit more qualified there. I understand that. Faster, cheaper, better, and the 9 levers for transforming how work gets done. How about you and your business or your products or services that you manufacture and sell? But stay with us for more of The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth coming up next. It's called Faster, Cheaper, Better, the 9 levers for transforming how work gets done. And its co-author is Lisa Hirschman, who is also CEO of Hammer & Company. And we're so happy to be talking with Lisa today. Lisa, it's great to have you here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
You know, I can't encourage our listeners enough to check this book out. It's just jam-packed with great information and too much to cover in today's interview, but I'm going to jump ahead. In your book, you note that most companies on the journey to becoming a process-centric organization won't have the luxury of hiring an entirely new workforce. Sounds reasonable, of course, as many CEOs might want to fire their entire staff and start all over. It's just not real. So if you're going to go out and handle an evolving infrastructure and implement a new process-centric organization, Lisa, you say this is where the 20-60-20 rule comes into play. Can you explain that for us?
Certainly. What we're talking about here is quite a bit of change within an organization. It's changing the way you think about how you work and how the work gets done itself. And our research indicates that there's a 20-60-20 distribution. 20% of the people will love this. They'll be very excited, and it sounds new, and it'll take the business to a whole new level. The other 20% will hate it no matter what. They'll say, this is too much, it's not necessary, etc. And here's what those two groups of 20% have in common. They're both influential. And it's the 60% in the middle that will be looking to both sides to say, which camp do I want to be in? And that's where you want to focus, is those folks. How do you bring them over and show them the value that can be obtained through looking and running your organization from a process standpoint?
Well, let's return to metrics for a moment. You discussed the seven deadly sins of measurement, and let's touch on a few of these today and hear you explain why they affect the company so negatively, beginning with the all-too-familiar vanity.
Yes, that's when you are looking at metrics and performance from your eyes rather than your customer's eyes, and that's one of our favorite examples is most companies capture and measure on-time shipping. However, you as a customer really care about when it's delivered, and there's a gap there. So, you know, what's important to the customer is on-time delivery, but we usually have a tendency to capture shipping instead. So it's from the viewpoint.
And then I'm going to skip ahead here. I thought maybe narcissism sounded similar to vanity, but it's not, is it?
It's very similar in that we want to make sure that we are showing metrics that, and there is a good tie-in because vanity also is we focus on the things that make us look good and we know we can achieve. Narcissism similarly is, well, you know, that delivery piece may be hard, but shipment is good, so I'm going to look at it from the shipment side. You know, one of our favorite examples is if you order something and you get, say you order a bicycle for your child, and you get 99 out of 100 pieces, well, the company's patting themselves on the back saying we got 99%, but if you didn't get the seat delivered to you, that's zero because you can't use the bike.
So baseball in general should be pretty down on itself right now, right?
It's all about what's important.
Yes, exactly.
You know, with people working more hours and harder and mobile and computers and laptops following people around during their off time, I think many would be surprised to see laziness as one of your reasons behind how a company can be affected so negatively. What's that about, Lisa?
Well, sometimes we get too comfortable, as we talked before, about the customer and what the customer wants. We get comfortable in, well, you know, we know that we've been delivering that for a long time. They haven't told us of any changes. And most organizations, when we ask about their measures, they're very internally focused, usually financial. We don't find effort to, even at the highest levels for corporate goals and objectives, we don't see a lot that pertains specifically to the customer. Other than customer satisfaction, some of the more tangible, you don't see that too often. It's growing, though, things like perfect order. And so we also get in the habit of measuring what our IT systems will capture, that data that's captured from the system, rather than is it really giving us the insight and the information we need, it's what the system will capture. And that's a little bit of laziness.
You know, to figure out what the other, or to discover what the other seven are, in addition to pettiness, frivolity, and others, you're going to have to read the book. So as a final question, Lisa, any last thoughts you'd like to leave our audience with today?
Well, I appreciate your interest. And, you know, we maintain, as I said earlier, that innovation, which is really what companies want to do to stay competitive, can come through the way you deliver or the way you work. And our tongue-in-cheek description of the book is how to take your head out of your task. And that's what we'd like people to focus on.
Well, that was a great name. That was a great name. Could have sold a few million more. No, probably not. I don't think so. Well, it's a great book, Lisa, and we are thankful to have you on the show today. We want you to go get the book as well, Faster, Cheaper, Better, The 9 Levers for Transforming How Work Gets Done. You'll find it, as Brad was saying before, at Amazon and a bunch of other places as well. So thanks again for being here today, Lisa.
Brad, Ray, thank you. It's been my pleasure.
On The Advertising Show, always a pleasure to be with you, too. I just want to say thank you for listening to The Advertising Show, being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com, and of course you can visit us anytime for a ton of great interviews here at theadvertisingshow.com. The Advertising Show is a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production. Talk to you next week.
Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.